18-14976, Warren Technology versus UL and Tutco. All right. Mr. Rogo, tell me I'm pronouncing that correctly.
You are, Your Honor.
Very good. You're a repeat player, I should know. Mr. Rogo, fire when ready.
Thank you. Bruce Rogo for Warren Technology, Andrew Herron, and Brian Lekic with me. This complaint should not have been dismissed. It stated a claim for relief, and the trial court erred in dismissing the complaint. Her dismissal of the complaint really has two aspects. One is that you cannot question the underwriter's laboratory saying that something is compliant or not compliant. I think the best way to look at this was a Lanham Act case. Did we allege the elements of a Lanham Act case? The allegations were Lanham Act, the claims involved Lanham Act and Florida FDUPTA and a common law claim.
And under any of those, do you have to show a misrepresentation?
Yes.
An objective misrepresentation.
Yes. And that was shown here. That was shown here because the standard, 1995, was alleged to have been falsely represented when they authorized Tutco to show that it had complied. It had not complied.
I guess the difficulty that I have with this is like objective falsity, which is what I think you've got to show for purposes of a misrepresentation, you know, black is white. And here it seems, to the extent there are competing interpretations, and it seems like that's what this case is. This is a case of competing interpretations of this regulation. That's not the stuff of which objective misrepresentation is made. I mean, this is sort of it's a case really about sort of authority to interpret, I guess.
Well, that's what we take issue with, Judge Newsom. And in the order below, the court talked about interpretation. But we are alleging that it was not an interpretation. It was a false application of standard 1995.
But I guess what you mean by false is like so wacky that it no longer deserves the appellation of interpretation.
Yes, clearly on its face. I mean, your black and white example is exactly the kind of example that I think makes the argument that we have here today. If the standard said that heaters had to be black, and UL put a stamp of approval on a heater that was white, it clearly would be a facial violation of the standard.
Yeah, true. So I guess the question then is whether intended operation as including or excluding both normal and abnormal operations is whether black and white is a fair analogy. And I'm just not quite sure it is. I mean, so it sounds like you're not denying that if UL gives a plausible interpretation of its own standard, it kind of gets to do that. But that this is just utterly implausible. No one with a double-digit IQ could think this is permissible.
On the face of the complaint, the allegation is made, and it's made in paragraph 51 and some subsequent paragraphs, that they did not apply 1995. Because if you applied 1995, you would have to have the non-restarting cutoff. And that's simple. I mean, one of the difficulties with this case is, I think if the Rule 8 short and plain statement of the case had been followed, that's all the allegation would have been. There would have been an allegation that this representation was false. And under 1995, it was false. And so what at that stage, the complaint should not have been dismissed. And that's really the stage at which we're at. And when Judge Ungaro talks about interpretation and idiosyncratic interpretation, this is not an interpretation. This is the standard, as we are alleging, that should have been followed and was not. So that would meet the false representation. And I listening to the other side's argument and reading her order, she seemed to think that this was not even a gray area. But our position is it's a black and white area, because really what's happened here is our client, Warren, has been hoisted on the petard of complying with the safety requirement and being precluded from challenging the misrepresentation that was made, the false representation that was made by UL and therefore by Tutco. So assuming you take the allegations as true, which you must, what do we have? We have a false statement. We have the standard of why it's false, because it didn't comply with 1995. We have an audience that's deceived. We have the purchasers being influenced, and we have the plaintiff being injured. And there's also footnote 3, I think, in her order, talks about all that Warren had to do was not comply itself, that this was a self-inflicted injury. That's why I'm saying that we were hoisted on the petard of doing the right thing. So if you take allegations...
By your terms, though, you would be over-complying, not non-complying.
Well, that's right. That's what she was saying. We'd be over-compliant, and we didn't have to comply. But that goes back to the threshold issue, is what was required to comply under 1995. And our argument was that the way we did it is what had to be comply, was what met compliance under 1995. So did we allege all of the elements of a Lanham Act claim? Yes. And by her taking the view that this was an idiosyncratic interpretation, it missed the mark, because the mark is the application. What is the proper application of 1995?
So your position is that the pleading stage, there is no ability for the district court to test your assertion that this is false?
Yes. Yes.
No, even where we're talking just about words on a page, the district court simply has to accept your view that this is false.
If something is plainly not false, plainly beyond dispute not false, then I would say, of course, the district court could look at it. If you said black is white and that's not what it says, well, then yes, the district court could look beyond that. But on the allegations of this complaint, she had to accept that 1995, the UL mark on the Tutco heater, that it complied with 1995, was false.
What sort of discovery would bear on the falsity element of this claim? I mean, at the end of the day, these really are just dueling interpretations of words on a page, right?
So of course, this is I resist interpretation, Justice.
I know you resist the characterization, but basically, you know, call it what you want. You think it means one thing. They think it means something else. And so what sort of discovery bears on that? I mean, this is going to be sort of a plain... this is going to look like a statutory interpretation case with some... I'm glad we have Judge Ginsburg here, with some regulatory sort of agency-ish overlay, right?
These are national standards, and so the national standard inquiry would be something that would be at the forefront of determining if there's any dispute about what 1995 means. I mean, clearly we...
But UL is the one that promulgated the regulation.
No, Judge Schoflat, that's an interesting point. This is a national standard.
Well, I understand that, but UL picks it up.
They make the determination,
yes,
of applying it to,
yes,
the product, but
yes,
it is not their standard. You know, it's a misnomer.
Well, NIST
their
standard?
Determination.
Who is NIST's?
The National Testing Institute makes these determinations of all of these standards. So, in response to your question, Judge Newsom, what would happen? Would there be expert testimony on this? Yes, there would be expert testimony on this. I mean, but on the face of 1995, the application was incorrect. And so you would have experts who would say, yes, it is incorrect. And perhaps they'd have an expert that says, no, it was the correct application. But it's something that is not to be resolved simply on the pleadings in the complaint. And the notion that there's no damage because all that Warren had to do was to be non-compliant under their understanding of 1995, that is not a way to avoid the damage claim that Warren had.
Why not? I mean, you'd be non-compliant by your interpretation, but not by UL's or the court's.
Well, we would not be compliant under the interpretation that we think is the proper interpretation of 1995. All I'm saying is that's how she treated the damage issue. She said that it's really a self-inflicted wound. You don't have to put these other cutoffs in your products, and that way it's not going to cost you extra money, and that way you'd be in the same situation that Tutco is.
Right, so what's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that is that falls right into what we're saying. We would then be knowingly non-compliant as we read 1995.
But as you read it, doesn't matter. But you wouldn't face any liability.
We wouldn't. Well, would we face liability? We would face the liability of losing sales because we had now compromised our view of what needed to be done. And so how could we be selling something that we thought was non-compliant?
Why isn't your second level of safety device a market advantage that actually gives you a benefit rather than a damage?
Because it has to do with cost. It has to do with how Tutco would market its devices, because our device, when something happens that raises the temperature so that it needs this automatic cutoff at a certain point, you'd have to then call someone in to make sure that the filters were not clogged, that the lines were not clogged. It would prevent exactly the kind of fire harm that the standard is perched on doing.
Is your device more expensive?
It's more expensive to install, yes. It's more expensive when you're selling it. So yes, it would be more expensive.
So it comes down to it, you're saying it's a higher quality and understandably more expensive as a result.
Yes, and it's safer.
That's the quality, yeah.
Yes, right. Yes. And so for those reasons, the court was in error in calling this an interpretation as alleged in the complaint. It's not an interpretation. It is an application. And the difference in those words is critical here. All the cases, the four cases that the court cited, Audek, BoardTech, brand marketing, none of those involve a situation like this. None of those involve a situation where it has been alleged that the stamp of approval is contrary, facially contrary, to what is required in the standard.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Judge Ginsburg.
When UL issues its interpretation, it's interpreting a standard promulgated by NIST. Is a national institute.
Institute, yes, sir.
Is it governmental?
No.
Okay. So it's interpreting that, and it seems to me the question that Judge Newsom alluded to is what deference or degree of deference, if any, is owed to UL here?
None.
Now, you would say none, and I understand that you're just treating this as any ordinary civil litigation. Why is it not appropriate that there be some deference, since they are authorized to apply?
And that I think is an important point, Judge Ginsburg. They're authorized to apply. They did not author it. This is the product of the national.
Did you go to NIST, the authoring agency, which I think is the JTP?
No, it should not necessarily. When you say should it go to?
No, did you? Should you have not gone to a higher authority, the one that promulgated, and say, look, UL's wrong here. Tell UL to stop.
Well, oddly enough, that we did do that, and they did agree with our interpretation, but they did not say it needed to be put into effect right away. So at the moment,
I thought they changed the rule.
They changed.
That's different than agreeing with your interpretation.
Well, they
suggest that your interpretation, you had a good idea, but it's not reflected in the current standard, so we're going to change it.
Well, I think it clarified, I'd use the word clarified, what must be done in terms of these safety provisions in the heaters. But the point is, again, coming back to the complaint, all these are interesting points, but coming back to the complaint, we allege falsity. We allege facial falsity. We allege damages. We met the Lanham Act and the Florida Deceptive Trade Practices Act claim, and it should not have been dismissed on that basis.
So just very quickly, a housekeeping matter, and I think this is just a yes-no question. The new rule to which Judge Ginsburg alludes, the new interpretation, July of 19, correct, relatively recently, does that moot out claims for declaratory and injunctive relief here?
No, I don't think it does. I don't think it's been applied, even though it said July 19. I don't think they've applied it yet, but I'm not sure. Let me consult with my co-counsel.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. You've got 3 minutes remaining. Mr. Cetera, are you kicking us off?
I am, Your Honor.
All right. Very well.
Thank you. My name is Frank Cetera from Greenberg Traurig, and I represent UL LLC. Let me pick up where Your Honor left off. So the standard that's at issue in this litigation is the fourth edition, which was published in 2011. UL 1995 has been around since 1990, and Clause 30.18 has been in the standard since 1990, and in fact was in the predecessor standards. The fifth edition, which became effective July 31st, 2019, as Your Honor suggests, did eliminate Clause 30.18. So in order to be certified starting on July 31st, 2019, the unitary electric heaters do now have to have an NSRT. So we
believe the forward-looking relief is maybe off the table, but you don't deny that their retrospective relief claims survive.
Correct. As we pointed out in our brief, we believe both the injunctive relief and the declaratory relief is now moot. To clarify a little bit further, so UL 1995 is actually published by UL Underwriters Laboratory, Inc., which is the ultimate parent of UL LLC, my client. It is a consensus national standard, which Warren has conceded in its complaint as well as in the briefing. It is a standard that is put together by a standards technical panel, which consists of members of the industry, including HVAC manufacturers of heaters. So this is a consensus national standard. And in fact, it is, in a sense, a battle of interpretation. But what's interesting about that battle is Warren stands alone in its interpretation of Clause 30.16 and Clause 30.18.
Let me ask you the flip side of the question that I asked Mr. Rogo. Is there, in a Lanham Act misrepresentation universe, is there any limit to the preposterousness of, we'll call it an interpretation by UL, can UL say that this thing mean, could they say that black means white?
Well, in order to prove up a Lanham Act case, you have to, of course, prove falsity, and I don't believe that's what we have here.
But you concede the black versus white example. If UL thing says black and in fact it says white, there is a Lanham Act claim. Could be.
Could potentially be.
You're just saying this case isn't that case.
I think the brand case, which are cited by Warren and which we distinguish, is an instance where a nationally recognized testing laboratory, and not UL, I think it was Intertech in that case, represented that the laboratory in China could do the testing. The testing was done incorrectly. That's not what we have here. There's no allegation that UL has interpreted this standard differently for different manufacturers. There's no allegation that somehow UL and Tutco have colluded with one another. And in fact, in order to be a nationally recognized testing laboratory, the OSHA has very rigorous requirements, including independence, neutrality, and you have to have a dispute resolution mechanism. And OSHA audits nationally recognized testing laboratories such as UL LLC, and that certification by OSHA has to take place every 5 years. So there are procedures in place for this type of dispute resolution. And in fact, as we see, Warren sought a change in the standard. The standards technical panel examined that proposed change. There was discussion, there was a vote, and the new standard accomplished what Warren is now asking this court to retrospectively accomplish. So there are procedures in place, and those procedures in this instance worked exactly the way they're supposed to work. There has been a change now from the fourth edition to the fifth edition. But in order to succeed, they attempt to plead falsity by asserting that UL certification of Tutco's heaters as compliant with UL 1995 is actually false because, and they use the word certain lines of Tutco heaters. So they don't, they've never even identified what heaters we're referring to, which bears a remarkable similarity to the Bortech case in which the Second Circuit as well as the Southern District of New York commented that in Bortech, the plaintiff never identified the specific light switches at issue. So what we have here is very vague allegations about what Tutco heaters may or may not be have these or not have the NSRT cutoffs. And indeed, the district court correctly concluded that Warren had adduced no convincing authority that Warren has the right to challenge UL's interpretation of this standard in the context of claims for Lanham Act, false advertising, FDUPTA, as well as the common law unfair competition claim. The district court, Judge Ungaro, cited approvingly the Idaho potato case, which has a very detailed discussion of what certification entails. And it makes the distinction between certification protection and trademark protection. And in that case, the Idaho potato case, the court says that the owner of a certification mark cannot refuse to license the mark to anyone on any ground other than the standards it has set. So unlike a trademark, here, once the certification holder, in this case ULC, is obligated to extend that certification to someone who has met its standards. To ask this court to now undo that certification regime is certainly a bridge too far. Moreover, 30.16, 30.18 are only two very small parts of a much larger standard. In fact, Section 30, which involves electric heaters, has 25 clauses in it. The entire standard, I believe, is 148 pages. So to now sort of nitpick two of these standards and the court tinker with them would have unintended consequences beyond just these two standards. I mean, between these two clauses.
Would any other manufacturers be affected?
Yes, there would be not only other manufacturers, but I believe there are 16 nationally recognized testing laboratories based on my review of the OSHA website in the last day or two. So there's nothing to prevent Tutco, for example, of walking down the block to another nationally recognized testing laboratory and have them certify the product as compliant with UL 1995. In fact, in the Kosky case, which was the case that Judge Scola had, which was the putative class action brought against UL, Tutco, and Warren, in fact, other nationally recognized testing laboratories were a defendant in that case.
Wait a minute, what happens if they go down the street? I mean, they're not, it's not as if they are being held non-compliant here.
Correct.
And then seek another lab to say they are compliant. Would there be some preclusion of that?
Well, what I'm suggesting
is... that's a different situation. Would there be preclusion in that situation?
No.
So you can get different, you can try 16 times to get a favorable application?
Well, you'd have to, so Intertek, for example, is another nationally recognized testing laboratory that has its own certification mark. So you would have to go to Intertek, for example, and have them make a determination whether they're willing to certify the product as compliant with either UL 1995 or some other standard.
Okay. Very well.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Mr. Russell?
Yes, the UL standard's much more valuable
for the consumer. May it please the court, Jeffrey Russell on behalf of Tutco. Very briefly, with regard to Tutco, this appeal tests whether one manufacturer can state a viable legal claim for false advertising or unfair competition based upon its competitor's use of the UL certification mark, where it is conceded that UL has in fact certified the product and licensed the use of that UL mark to the competitor. The allegations in the complaint themselves are self-defeating. The amended complaint alleges that UL has certified the Tutco product and that Tutco uses that certification with UL's authorization. It also alleges that Tutco's use of that mark is false. Those two allegations simply cannot stand side by side. What Warren is trying to do is create a new species of claim where, having failed in the marketplace to sell its product to Carrier, it now turns to the courts to use this false advertising or unfair competition claim as a weapon where it has failed in the marketplace. If Warren believes that Tutco's product is improperly certified, it has ample remedies. And that lies in changing UL's mind about the certification of the product, or alternatively, changing its customer, Carrier's, mind about whether the Tutco product is safe.
Or I guess, in the third alternative, getting UL to change the rule, which it did.
And that's changing UL's mind, I agree. It also has another alternative, which the court touched upon earlier, and which the lower court recognized, which is to simply change design, use a less expensive, less complicated component, and thereby comply with the UL certification and compete on a level playing field with Tutco. Its decision not to do so is, as the district court recognized, a self-inflicted wound. That goes to the second reason. So I guess, first, there's no objective falsity. Second, there's no proximate cause. What we're dealing with here is an allegation that there are two competitors who are selling to one customer, Carrier. At most, Warren has alleged or argued in its reply brief, but for causation. In other words, if a sale is lost by Warren, it's gained by Tutco and vice versa. That is but for causation. It is not loss causation or proximate cause. The reason Tutco, and this is in their allegations, the reason Tutco is not buying their product is because it's less convenient, it requires a technician to be called every time your heater shuts down, and because it's more expensive. Both of those decisions, to use an NSRT that requires a technician and is more costly, are decisions that lie within Warren's control. So it's not anything that Tutco has done or represented. It is Warren's decision to use a more complicated, expensive product. Unless the court has any questions.
You said sales are to Carrier. I thought they were to the Carrier's customers, if I'm mistaken.
No, Carrier is the HVAC manufacturer that buys from both Tutco, buys from Tutco, at times has bought from Warren, now buys exclusively from Tutco. So these are not products that are sold to the retail marketplace, to the homeowner. They are sold to very sophisticated HVAC manufacturers who have their own ability to determine whether these products are safe. So there's an additional level of safety. And in fact, the complaint at paragraph 70 and 71 allege that Carrier will not buy a product that is not UL certified, or it requires the product to be UL certified and it will not buy a product that is falsely certified. So in fact, we know that Carrier itself is making a decision with regard to the safety of these products, and it requires the UL mark. In other words, Carrier is depending not upon what Tutco says about its product, it's depending upon what UL says about the Tutco product in making that purchasing decision. And that's not me making that up or what Warren is saying. That's the allegations that are contained in paragraph 70 and 71 of the complaint.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Ruggo, you've got 3 minutes. Can I ask you just very briefly at the outset,
yes,
to maybe pick up with Tutco? Because as to Tutco, can you even get past falsity? I mean, do you deny that UL certified Tutco's product?
I do not deny that.
So what's the misrepresentation that Tutco made?
That they are misrepresenting not that UL certified it, because they did. They are misrepresenting the compliance with 1995. They do have the UL certification, but that UL certification was based on a falsity. Then so UL promulgated that falsity, and Tutco then is going forward with that falsity. And no case stands for the proposition that one cannot go back and test whether or not a statement that's made by the underwriting laboratory people is false in terms of their certification. They were the beneficiary of that false certification. And so therefore they carried that false certification forward, exposing them to liability too, in terms of the allegations in the complaint. And I think it's interesting that the discussion you've heard this morning really rises and falls on the allegations of this complaint. And our allegations, when one looks at the allegations, make it clear that this certification was false. Not the interpretation of it, but the application of it. And I think it's interesting, the point that the rule has now been changed. So how does that cut? Which way does that cut? It cuts in favor of us. It underscores the fact that the past conduct that we're talking about was based upon a falsity. And the fact that now this falsity, in effect, is confirmed.
Or that they simply changed their mind.
Pardon me?
I say it doesn't necessarily mean that the past rule was false.
Yes.
The standard was false.
Yes.
I don't see how it does.
That's
another decision.
Well, if something is now proven to be false, what was done before, and I'm saying this is beyond where the complaint is, because we're not really litigating this at this point. We're litigating whether or not the complaint stated a claim for relief under Rule 8, and it did. What happens next, and going back to Judge Newsom's question, what will happen next? I mean, will there be discovery? Will there be summary judgment? Yes, and the case would be resolved one way or the other at that point. But our argument now simply is the complaint should not have been dismissed as it stood. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Ruggo. We'll be in recess until tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.